Welcome to another episode of the Magnus and Marcus podcast. I'm Steve Magnus, the head cross-country coach at the University of Houston, author of The Science of Running, and I'm joined in person by my man, John Marcus, philosopher extraordinaire of High Performance West.
We're live, baby. Eugene, Oregon.
I know.
What it do?
Face to face. So, sitting at a coffee shop, doing our thing, I guess. It's Sunday. July 3rd. So we figured let's delve into the trials a little bit.
Yeah.
And I think lessons learned, maybe observations made from a coaching standpoint, which I think is a little bit different than an athlete or fan standpoint.
Yeah. You know, we're, day three on the trials. And the hard thing about the Olympic trials is it's a weird meet from a coach and from an athlete standpoint, in respects that the build up to it is like the most fun, because everyone's happy, excited to be here, like, oh my gosh, Olympic trials, like the world's my oyster. But then as you continue on with the meet, the tone gets severely more depressed, except for a small group of people. I mean, essentially 7/8 of each field leaves home, goes home and leaves this place very unhappy, or very just deflated, I should say. So only 1/8 of each event group, leaves here being on cloud nine when everyone walks in. So, this is a tough meet, because it's like, as it's one, difficult to make the meet, very difficult to get here. And then two, if you're in, a event that has qualifying rounds, it's difficult to qualify up from the rounds, the semis, to the finals. So going in as a coach, the high likelihood you have is you have to figure out, how to pick up the pieces with each athlete or every athlete you have, because the vast majority of the outcomes will be that. So, it's exciting to be able to celebrate making the Olympic team, but also too, you have, people put in all this effort, energy, work, intensive labor, not just for months and weeks, but sometimes years, and they get to this pinnacle of an event and then they fall flat in their face. And it's not because you're a bad coach or the athlete's not talented. This is just the best of the best. Yeah, everyone's at their best, competing against the best. And it's a very difficult challenge to come out on the favorable side of being on the top three.
It's funny. It's like the atmosphere coming into this meet is just pure excitement, as you mentioned. And I think, like, if you look at athletes, it's 4 years for most of them building to this point where everything has been centered around, like, in their heads through training. It's like, this is why I'm training. This is why I have a shot. And as you said, for 7/8 of them, they come out and it's like reality hits.
Yeah.
And what do you do after that reality hits? Mm-hmm. And I think from a coaching standpoint, is that defines things more than almost anything? Because this is a career-changing, like, event.
Yeah.
Because you either come off of this, like, excited, like, what's the next challenge? Or you come off of it lost, in the sense that you don't know what to do. You're like, oh, my God, like, I failed at the thing that I had put 4 years of work, 8 years of work into making.
Yeah.
Like, what's my sense of purpose in terms of running? And it can really make athletes, like, almost do this, like, quarter-life crisis, right? Yeah. Where they're just like, what am I doing with my life? Like, can I make it?
Yeah.
Is there a purpose to me, like, running beyond, like, making this Olympic team? And I think that's why you see athletes go one of two ways. It's either they're keep trekking along, or
ideally it's like you want this to be a seed of growth. You want to be able to plant the seed here and have a growth moment happen. And 9 times out of 10, growth happens outside the comfort zone, and it happens within a disappointment. That's where we get better, is when we don't succeed, because it forces us to recalibrate, forces us to really do a gut check and think, okay, is this really worth it? But nowhere else in business or in life do you have essentially a street fair where all the best artists in the world come together and are out hawking their wares on the street and saying, well, here are the like 24 best artists in the country at this genre, and whoever sells the most today, you're then you guys are then the golden children for the next couple months or even couple years. And it's not to say you're a bad artist or your art's, you know, not incredible in its own right, but it's a matter of how you pick up those pieces, a matter of how you water that seed of devastation or water that seed of disappointment into, you know, a lotus flower that comes out of the mud and muck. Because that's the reality of what majority of coaches and athletes are going to face. I always tell people, you know, when, you know, athletes that I have or athletes Steve might have, like, or other coaches, they don't make the team. So, guys, we're just in the majority. We're just the majority opinion. We're just the majority vote here. It's the very select minority that was fortunate enough to have it all come together, right place, right time. And not taking anything away from any of the athletes that make it or don't make it. I mean, everyone's training for that same, you know, outcome, but only three get to realize it per event group. And it's just understanding how extraordinarily difficult that is and still being up for the challenge.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. I mean, it's, I think as a coach, like, what you try and bring is perspective. And, like, bringing that perspective that it's not all, like, it's all eggs in one basket where you fail, you know? And it's, like, bringing that perspective where it's, like, it's not the end of the world if you don't make the trials or make the Olympics, because I think that's what happens. Like, people put so much into it that it's, like, do or die. If I die, like, I have to reevaluate my whole world.
Yeah.
You know? It's like my world changes. Yeah. And I think that's a very dangerous, tricky thing to do.
Yeah.
Because I've had, I mean, I've dealt with athletes in the past where it's, and we've all seen stories where it's like a year later and they're still heartbroken.
Yeah.
Like, from the trials experience.
And just because you made the Olympic team too. I mean, how many Olympians have we seen at this trials, perennial Olympians,
right,
and big dogs, American record holders, who, you know, that was their, this was their, this was it, this was the swan song. Okay, hey, I didn't even make it out the rounds, or DNF'd, and now I'm retiring and I'm done and I'm, it's over. I mean, I can, you know, list a handful off the top of my head. It's like 4 years ago they had the, you know, enthusiasm and emotion and joy of making the team, and either they didn't even get a start, or they got, you know, they pulled up and didn't finish, or they didn't even make it out the rounds. Like, it's incredibly difficult, this task. And so just by being labeled an Olympian doesn't mean you're, you know, better than everyone else at your craft, or by not mean, doesn't mean you're not. And I think this applies to any championship level, whether you're high school, college, you know, or post-collegiate. The tough part about this is, you know, at the NCAA level and the high school level, you know, they give awards like eight deep. Like, hey, you're an All-American. Hey, okay, great. Eighth place. Like, good job. It's like that positive reinforcement, which is what you want in the scholastic developmental ranks. But here, it's just three.
Yeah.
It's only three. And like, hey, you got eighth. And you know what? That sucks. Because here, fourth is, you know, is the same as like 24th.
Exactly.
And that's the difficulty of the situation.
And you know, I think the other thing sometimes people don't realize on the outside is that, like, a lot of sponsored athletes, their contracts are done after this.
Yep.
Like, they're up. Yep. It's renewal time. So it's like, not only do you have like your own internal expectations and pressures, but you also have these external things where it's like, I finish, I maybe just miss a team, and now it's this reality of like, oh, like, can I, can, am I going to be able to continue to pursue this for four more years under the same way I did this last 4 years? And for a lot of the athletes, they can't.
Well, and I think that tells you their true colors.
Like, exactly.
I always judge someone not by how easy the success comes, but how they deal with the setback. And that's really the telling, you know, characteristic of championship type competitors. Because when you look at these trials and you look at, you know, people who are making teams, it hasn't always been, you know, cookies and roses for them. You know what I mean? They've had setbacks. They've not made finals. They've had bad years. You know, and the timing just all came together right here, right now, which has been great. But at the same time, too, that's a very difficult thing to, you know, set up as well. And what I saw, I've seen a lot of, is actually I've seen a lot of, like, and I've been thinking about it, overcoaching. Like, I think we're doing, there's too much information, we're doing too much, and I've been talking with a lot of different coaches, like, it's just knowing what not to do, really.
Yeah.
But everyone's done all these different programs and have these different auxiliary integrations with performance therapy and physios and adjustments, and we're going to do this, you know, litany of drills with regularity. And I'm a proponent for all that stuff in moderation, but I just see, like, it's just everyone's so wired in and so dialed in and thinking this added thing to do, this added thing to, you know, include is going to be the difference maker. But really, you can't underscore the value of rest, the value of just doing nothing, the value of just coming in ready to roll because you're giving yourself the emotional space and time to adapt or regenerate from the things you did choose to do. And that, especially at this level, because you have a really educated populace of coaches, athletes, agents, you know, and people who know their stuff inside and out are awesome. And sometimes we just get in our own way.
I think what it is that this meet more than any takes the control away from you.
Yeah.
Because, like, in other situations, other races, like, you know the field, you know who's going to do what, you know what a rabbit is going to do. You can control, like, you know, if you go out to Stanford, you're going to get these conditions. You know things, and you can control the variables around them. And you get to trials, and it's much less control. So I think a lot of times what happens from a coaching perspective is, like, we feel like, oh my God, like, I can't, I don't have a hand in this. Like, so I'm going to have, you know, we're going to go overboard, and we're going to have A, B, C, and D set up, and we're going to go through this thing and have it, you know, all set, everything scheduled and planned, and you're going to be this focused, and you're going to do this drill, and you're going to do this, you know, massage work at this time. And it's just, to me, it's all a sense of coaches trying to grasp for control where there is very, very little.
Yeah. And that's, you know, I think that's human nature. We you know, a lot of us, we have these plans or these blueprints, and we're like, okay, we follow this. We think it's going to correlate with this type of outcome or set us up to be competitive. But at the same time, too, it's human beings with human emotions. And you have to recognize what this trials is. It's, you know, an athlete. Athletes are self-selecting the team to that's going to represent the U.S. in Rio or at the Olympics. And I tell people, like, that's the whole goal here. Like, if you run safe and run conservative or compete conservative and you compete smartly, but you get sixth, if you never really tried to get top three, it's a total failure. Like, put your nose in it, try to, you know, win, try to get top three as for as long as you can. And if you walk away with a clear conscience saying, I tried either in the beginning, the middle, or towards the end to do this and it didn't pan out, you can live with yourself. But if you're like, oh, hey, I ran a smart race and I got sixth, but I never really tried to make the team. It's like, why'd you show up? Why did you show up?
And I think that's, like, that's why results are very, can be, you know, disconcerting on this, or almost not tell the picture. Because, like, for instance, in the 10Ks, you know, you had people who kind of sat back and just kind of ran their race, which is great in a normal race. But you had a whole slew of group who said, all right, I'm hanging on to the leaders for as long as possible just to give myself a shot. And if I blow up, I blow up. And you had some major, major blow-ups.
Big time blow-ups. But respect.
A lot of respect. Because they put themselves, like I always say, you have to put yourself in position to do something.
Right.
And this is a meet where you put yourself in position to do something. And if it's there on that day, it's going to click and you're going to feel great and you're going to go with it and you're going to feel good. But if it's not there, you know what? You can look back and say, I did everything I could to put myself in position to take a chance and make it. Give myself a shot. And I think that's what it is, more than, like, you know, hey, I finished 8th or versus 12th versus 18th. Like, it doesn't...
Well, you're not here to run a PR.
No.
You know, you're not here to do... I mean, it's great if you do. It's awesome. But it's only if you had that competitive earnestness to say, I'm going to try to give myself the best opportunity possible to make this team or put myself in a position to make a team. And I think that's the difficulty with this meet is, you know, being an Olympian, being the top three at your craft in, you know, a very large country, you know, like the United States, where we do actually take this sport very seriously, despite what, you know, the critical pundits and media, you know, wants us to think. we just have to realize it's so, so difficult. And difficulty is not something to shy away from. Difficulty is something to embrace. And, you know, a lot of times it's also, too, you know, reminding athletes, you made it here. I mean, I can't tell you how many athletes I have or friends of athletes who their goal was to get here.
Yep.
And they didn't even get here. Or it ended in injury. Or it ended in, you know, something, you know, less than desirable. And they already had their tears. They had their tears because they didn't make it. And then all these people have their tears because they didn't qualify out of the rounds, or they'll have their tears if they're in the final and they don't make the team. And then at the same time, too, the people who do make the team, they might have their tears later down the road when they don't make it out of the rounds at the Olympics, or they don't get on the podium at the Olympics. Like, it's just, it's such a difficult crucible. You know, you're kind of like warding off your tears till a later stage down the road, unless you're the best of the best of the best and everything goes your way. And that momentum thing is amazing. It's a beautiful thing to watch. And that's why you watch the trials, because anything can happen. I mean, people who were picked to be Olympians here don't even make it out of the rounds.
Yep.
Like, they were supposed to, by all everyone's thought and by their preparation and the prowess they showed early and, you know, who they were as a consistent, say, competitor, like, oh, yeah, they're going to be on the team. Not even close. Like, it's the craziest thing in the world. I mean, that's why the Christian Smith 800 meter story in 2008 is so amazing, because last guy in, and he took full advantage of the opportunity.
But yep,
that was it. That was the pinnacle of his career. And he was out of the sport 2 years later, you know, moving on with his life. So it's a very difficult thing to manage, this continual excellence at this high, high level. But it's also fun to watch and see now a new guard, you know, really coming in, because we're at this watershed moment, especially in the distance, where there's a lot of new names on the track and new faces that haven't been the perennial athletes that and megastars we've depended on the last two Olympic cycles. And so it's fun to see what these young athletes are doing, and also how they're going to compete down the road at the Olympics and represent Team USA.
Yeah, I mean, what it does for me is it really makes me impressed and amazed by the consistent performers who get things done.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. The ones, I mean, use example, Molly Huddle in the 10K. It's just amazing how consistent she has become and just took the race by its horns and just said, I'm going to do what I need to do to make it. And, like, I think, like, that type of performance, like, as a coach or athlete or fan, you just kind of take it for granted. In the sense that, like, a lot of people are like, oh, Molly Huddle made the team. And it's like, no, do you realize how difficult that is to do? Like,
year in and year out.
Year yeah. in and year out yeah. to be like, I'm going to do it and not have a mishap. I mean, you see it all the time. Shoes come off, yeah. you get yeah. tripped, yeah. you miscalculate things. Yeah. Like, you make a bad move here and there. You don't run all the way through the line. Like, something happens and people go home who, as you said, are by all accounts destined to make it. And I think, like, that for me, that consistency and excellent performance is just something that, like, takes me aback and says, like, that job well done. Like,
yes.
Kudos to you. Yeah. People don't realize how difficult that is to do.
Right. It's phenomenal, and it's inspiring if you're watching it as a coach who kind of, you know, is just like, man, you know how difficult that is. And you know, as an athlete who might not have even made this meet, or maybe might have been in the race, those races, and experienced that type of proficiency firsthand, you know, looking back and reflecting after your disappointment has worn off. And so the question is, though, how do you pick up the pieces? You know, how do you get re-energized? Because that's what the majority of people have to leave here debating is, How do I, okay, I had this dream, I had this vision, like, I made it, look, Ma, I did good, but I didn't do good enough. And then, so it's like, where do you go from here? And it's just reminding yourself, I think, in a lot of ways, and reminding your athletes that, hey, you're a good coach, you're with good people, this is the most difficult crucible, you know, in the whole sporting track and field world to deal with. And it's understanding the clarity of vision about where you want to go. I think that's talking to a lot of athletes, you know, there's a lot of people interested in making moves or finding a new coaching situation or new training groups. And I've been, you know, and I know Steve's been just communicating, informing with a lot of these types of athletes. But what it really comes down to like a Molly Huddle type, or, you know, a Brendan Martinez type, or Boris Berian, is that very crystal clear vision. And that's what you need to have. Is if you have that clarity about what you're aiming for and what you're competing for and what you're preparing for, that helps a lot. But also, too, how difficult and at what degree that prowessness, you know, is to be competent. And if you don't have that diamond cut, you know, just, I know exactly what's going on. I can see right to the bottom of the ocean on a clear day, yeah. You know, clear water capacity. Then if there's a little bit of cloudiness, it gets exposed in your preparation, and then it gets exposed and magnified at a stage like this. And so that's, you know, what I kind of champion with athletes I work with, and every other coach who is kind of like devastated or like, oh man, how do we pick up the pieces? Like, it's time to get re-energized and refocused, but being very, very clear about what it is you want. Because if you just want to be good, or you just want to run fast times, or you just want to make a final, you're probably going to achieve it, but then you get to that stage and then it's like, well, what's next? Oh, I made the final. Okay, yeah. That's great, you made the final, but you were not competitive. Well, what does it take to be competitive to final? And then it colors your lens for all your preparation moving forward based on what you have at this stage. And that's why I always tell people, I mean, athletes I have, it's like, yeah, sit and watch the final. Like, no, don't go home. Like, I know you're devastated. I know the emotions are flooding through, but sit here and watch the rest of the trials. Watch the final. Like, watch and learn, because by seeing what it takes in person, that's going to help create a much better vision for yourself about how you choose to move forward.
Yeah, I mean, you know, whenever I've had athletes who, you know, don't quite make it and don't quite accomplish their goals or whatever, it's, my philosophy has always been like to turn to them and ask them what excites them. You know, it's like, what are you excited about going forward to re-energize yourself? You know, I remember a conversation after Neely decided to pull out of the marathon trials and not do it. And it was this conversation of, do we go try and run the 10K trials just so we can run the trials, or do we go run what ended up being Boston? And, you know, in her head, she was like, well, the 10K trials are the logical thing to do because, like, everybody wants to run the Olympic trials, and I want to do that too, but it doesn't excite me.
Right.
Like, yeah. I'm not passionate about going and running 25 laps on the track because it's, like, although she's like, I know I have to get good at it, it's not, like, what I'm passionate about right now.
Right.
It's not, like, what is going to get me up and drive me every day to put in the training. Like, I want to explore the marathon. And, like, that's your answer right there. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, for you, like, that is your vision. You see your vision right now is marathoner. I want to see how good I can be at this. Like, let's go full force into it and not worry about the track trials. And I think that's, like, that evaluation after going through something like this is what you have to do.
Right.
You know, you have to sit back and say, okay, what gets me juiced? What gets me excited to get better and keep improving? It's not saying like, okay, like I didn't make it on the track, like I'm gonna go do some road stuff.
Yeah.
You know, no, that's, that doesn't work. Like, yeah. It's not like your fallback. It's like, what am I jazzed about to like train my ass off to get better at something and compete? And I think that, like, that one answer defines what way you go. Because I think a lot of times people come out of this meet and they say like, oh, like, I've been exposed. Yeah. I'm not good enough to make it on this.
Yeah.
What's the easier route?
Yeah.
You know, what event can I try, or what route can I go that gives me a little better shot at like making it to either Olympics or Team USA in something? Yeah. And I think that's the wrong way to do it. Like, if you're looking for the easy route, like, what's going to happen is it's going to become a hard route because everybody else is, you know.
Yeah, you have a lot of smart people looking at this.
Like, it's not going to be easy, you know.
But you need to embrace that difficulty. And that's what makes sport and life awesome, is the people who embrace the difficulty of the task and find a way to transcend or rise above or get more proficient at that and raise the bar of excellence at the task. And, you know, that's what sport is about. That's why sport's a beautiful, unifying thing, is when that happens, when something's very, very difficult, people understand the degree of difficulty, prepare accordingly, and then show proficiency at that task at the right place, right time. And sport does not, at the higher levels, champion the people who want the easy way out.
Yep.
You know, understand, like, at the scholastic level, I always tell people there's so many divisions of competitiveness and classifications at high school level. And then, you know, and then there's a lot, you know, at the collegiate level. But then post-collegially, there's not. There's nope. one classification, and that is it. And everyone who does it is good. I think, you know, we went down, Steve and I were sitting together watching the women's 10K final because we both had athletes in there, and they're doing introductions, and it's like, this champion, and this person's a multi-champion, and this person, record and champion. And every single one of those ladies had some type of notable championship
yep.
that they had accomplished. I mean, that's a good feel. Like, I mean, everyone's a winner. Everyone's used to winning. And only three people can, you know, technically come out of that match winning, because you're just competing against such a stacked field. And that's what's awesome about it. And I think you have to feel the privilege of being competent and capable and healthy enough to be able to be there and compete. But two, just know, like, this is life, man. It's not like everyone's a small business owner, you know. You go out of business, you know, with your first business idea because maybe the location wasn't right. Maybe because right. the product you have really wasn't that good, even though you thought it would be something that was going to be exciting to people. And so you just innovate and you get better, you know. And failure is awesome because you have to, as an athlete, have thick skin and embrace failure. And again, use it as the seeds to help you grow. And if you don't use failure as the watering ground for the seed of growth, then, you know, you need to really reconsider why you're doing this.
Yeah. I think it's really a mindset shift, you know? It's like you have to see failure as an opportunity to grow. I mean, it's... I think I've mentioned it before, but there's some really cool research that shows, like, the biggest or the best opportunity to change your fears, like, if you have a fear of height, is to go experience that.
Yep.
Experience that fear, and then in your head, like, evaluate and almost, like, reframe it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it's like when you embrace that fear is the chance you have to change it. And I think it's the same with when you're dealing with coming off of trials or a big moment. It's like this is your opportunity to evaluate and step back and be like, okay, I'm here. How do I get to where I want to be? Mm-hmm. Or how do I keep moving forward to see if I can make it to that place?
Right.
And I think that's like, that's the mentality you have to have instead of, oh, I'm broken. Mm-hmm. I'm not good enough. Like, my pieces are all scattered across, shattered across the ground. Like, I've got to, you know.
Something was wrong in training. Yeah, training was bad. It's like, no, training was great. You got here.
And I think that's, like, that's the mistake I think a lot of times us coaches make is, like, you go, ah, like, we didn't make it. Let's go back. Let's look at the training. Like, something had to be off. Something had to be this. And a lot of times it's not.
No.
It's because, like, you know, the margin of error is so thin, okay? It's so thin. You add in some, you add in 24 of the other best people in the country, and, you know, shit happens.
Yeah, it's just, it's difficult. I mean, that's, it's just life. Life is difficult, and it's embracing those difficulties is really, it's more of a mindset. It's more of a characteristic. It's, that's what it is, and that's what I've walked away with, not being like, oh man, can I learn some new drill or some new, like, you know, matrix of physical preparation that's going to enhance? It's like, you got people here, they're really good. And I'm competing against other really good people who are very, very dialed in and talented and capable themselves. And here it's just about mindsets, desire, you know, willingness to put your nose in it, and then how resilient you are. I mean, Phoebe Wright's a great example, good friend of ours. I mean, she's, by all accounts, from a physical preparation standpoint, should not be in the final of the women's 800. But, you know, she had a really tough load here with, you know, pharmacy school.
Yep.
You know, she wasn't able to, like, go to all her team's practices, wasn't able to go to altitude. She wasn't able to do all these things. But Phoebe's had so many years of preparation and so many ups and downs. Like, she just is really appreciative of having the opportunity to be healthy and physically, you know, competent in being here. And she knows how to, you know, stick her nose in it. She knows she's a savvy veteran. She knows she has one big move, and she seems to always make it the right time. And she's snuck in as, like, the last or second last time qualifier out of the round and out of the semis and now into the final. And you can't discount her, you know, in a final, because she's just the old savvy vet, and not old in a bad way, but old with a lot of wisdom and experience under her belt. And those are the types of athletes. It's like, she's been up highest of the peaks, lowest of the valleys, and now she finds herself in a very precarious position that a multitude of other people in her event would love to be in. But she's there because it was a culmination of all these things. And maybe physical prep wasn't perfect, but her mind frame and her ability to be, you know, cognizant and in the moment and evaluate and said, man, I've been here so many times. I've seen so many 800 meter races. I know how to react and respond and get the job done. I mean,
well,
awesome.
You know, I think with Phoebe is what, you know, after talking with her after she made the final, is like the comment she made was that, like, I know other people are going to mess up and make moves at the wrong time and just, you know, almost like freak out and do something.
Yeah.
And it's like, I just need to do my race, like make my one move at the right time, and just, if it's good enough, it'll be there.
Yep.
And it's not, and I think that, especially in the 800, is like, your margin of error is so thin that, like, you have to execute your one race and just worry about that.
Yeah.
And you see other people, it's like, I mean, there's some really good people who did not make that final.
Yeah, I mean, people who made the final last year. People yep. who won indoor championships.
Yeah.
Everyone's good.
Everyone's good. But, and I think that's something to say is, like, you know, Phoebe sometimes, because she ran really fast early, like, doesn't get a lot of credit, I think. But she finds herself consistently in the final at U.S. Champs year after year.
And it's a different game running fast versus running rounds.
Yes.
And I think it's about how you prep. And people are like, oh, this person ran really fast. They ran a sub 2, or they ran 2 flat
yeah.
for, like, women's 8. Or they've ran this fast 5K or 10K. Yep. Like, you know, that's what Steve and I are talking about, like, for the 10K is, oh, man, these people ran a really fast 10K in perfect conditions in Palo Alto. And, man, they're going to look at, they're going to be able to crank. And it's like, no, man, I mean, he and I both had athletes who ran, like, a minute, 2 minutes, however many, slower than what they did in, you know, the Stanford. Because you just, all you're doing, it's a qualification race, right? Stanford's just trying to qualify you, or Peyton Jordan, or those types of 10s, or the 800 you're running in the regular season, just get you the qualifying mark to get here.
Yep.
And then you find yourself on the line and take as much opportunity and advantage as you can to just continue, if you're in a rounds type situation, to survive in advance, or if you're in a final situation, just to move up and compete, because you don't know what type of races will be in front of you, but you have to prepare for the competition that you'll be facing, rather than just going at this perfect prescribed pace.
A qualifier just gives you the opportunity to compete.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes it's easy, like, what happens is athletes look down the list and they say, oh, I'm here.
I'm in this pecking order.
Mm-hmm. So, like, I have this mindset of I should qualify to the next round, or I should make the final, or this should be relatively easy. Like, I'm in control because I have this time.
Yeah.
And I think that's a lot of times where you see people mess up is, like, again, it's this false sense of control. And it's like, no, because, like, you might have run this time, but you have somebody who's, like, half a percentage below you who is going to be running their ass off. And they know, I have to do everything I can in this heat to make it to the next one.
Right. And it goes back to just having the clarity about what you're doing.
Yep.
Like, you see it in the men's 800, like, with Eric Swinski and Boris Berrien and, you know, Kazlox. And, like, those are guys who have made teams, or, you know, Boris won the indoor 800. Yep. You know, Eric Swinski, Kaz, and Boris were 1, 2, 3, I believe, at the U.S. Indoor Champs. Like, those guys know how to get through rounds. And they've done it so many times, and when they're preparing, they know exactly why they're preparing.
Well, Boris is a great example, because he didn't do it last year, right?
No, he ran that 1:42, and everyone's like, oh, he's a lock. He's a lock. And he was out in the second round.
Which is, you know, I think that's a great example of someone who ran really fast, learned from his mistakes. You know, V Hill and those guys are going to learn from that and make sure they have it covered.
Yep.
And they did great job indoors of saying, hey, you need to run your race in the rounds, treat it as get to the final and you'll be okay, and do it. Did it indoors. And then you saw Boris this year is different from Boris last year in a sense where he, in both his prelims, was like, I'm going to execute my race. If I feel a little tired, it doesn't matter. I'm executing my race to make it to the final.
Yeah.
And I think that's, like, where I think sometimes in that sense you saw athletes with a different mindset of, like, I need to make it to the next round, conserving as much energy as possible.
Yeah, I need to hang out, I need to chill, I need to save something. It's like, at this level, at this game, it's 100%. Every step's 100%. You need to show all your cards all the time, because if you don't, you run the risk of not being able to get to the next phase to show your cards.
Yes.
And I think, too, that's it's a preparation mindset. I mean, I know, like, I had an athlete, Michaela Fricker, who, you know, we were preparing for the 800, and the whole year it's been about preparing to do run 201 twice and then get ready to, you know, get in the final and run two flat 159. You know, she didn't make it out the final, like, or out the semifinal. So she didn't make the final, and it was just this total, like, shock. And, I mean, it sucks, but that happens, and I just remind her, Michaela, you're very good, but so is everyone else. Like, I mean, when you make your move, you got to own it and own it 100%. You can't have any shade of doubt come in your mind, because if you have that momentary exposure, it doesn't even matter the event, you're going to get exposed to it. And that's the beauty of this high degree of competition, and that's why it's so much fun. And I think the more clarity you have in your approach in the months when no one's looking, in the times you're at the track or the gym by yourself, not just doing the work, I did all the work, I ran the reps, I lifted the weights, but knowing exactly what each thrust of movement is going to, like, enhance you, that is where you see them here, like, they totally know what they're doing. Like, you look at Sawinski, look at the, like, they, those guys know exactly
what they're doing. They know what they're doing, they execute their plan.
Yeah. And respect. Like, it's very hard to do.
Too.
And that's why I enjoy watching this meet, because I'm going to sit down and watch the whole meet, because it's like, as a coach and just as a fan, you understand the degree of difficulty, and it's inspiring. It makes you want to get back to the lab and keep tinkering and keep working and keep enhancing. So should you get that athlete that next time, you know exactly how to not just physically prepare them, which we talk a lot about, but more so emotionally and mentally. And that's really a championship. You know, a good championship does not go to the fruits of the person best physically prepared, but the balance of optimal physical preparation combined with optimal emotional preparation.
Well, I think if you looked at everyone who's made the team or made a final so far, it's like, it's been, as you said, a very clear picture of what they had to do. And then when they made their moves, they made their moves. And there wasn't, there's not this, as you mentioned, like that, I think that mental aspect of avoiding that freak out moment where you start to question yourself on, like, here's all these, I'm moving, but here's all these people around me. Are they feeling better?
Yeah.
Are they good? Like, my legs are kind of tired. Do I have this? And I think that's when you see people just, like, go backwards.
Yeah, it unravels. And it unravels quickly. You know, like, like Michaela, like, she was super disappointed not making the final, and she goes, gosh, it just ended so poorly and so bad. Like, of course, it always ends. Like, it, when it ends, it's going to be very abrupt and very, you know, intense and very ferocious. And it's just going to be super messy. Anything that ends is super messy.
Well, it's, as you saw, especially in all the 10Ks, where you, men's 10K, where you had people go from running, train going by. You had people going from running in that, you know, third place, fourth place, to just stopping.
Just stop.
I'm done. It went from, I have a chance to be on the team, to complete an utter, like, explosion. I mean, Legat, when he stopped, he looked dead on the ground. Like, he just fell to the ground and just was exhausted.
Yeah, and that's what you see. You see the emotional unraveling. Because it's not that they're not physically prepared or fit or capable. It's just the emotional, you know, yarn just become, the string comes loose and it just completely becomes unwound, and that's the difficulty of the situation, because there is a lot of emotion in the preparation and the focus and the demeanor that everyone brings to the track. And again, you know, kind of hitting home and coming back to our original point, it's about how you pick up the pieces as a coach, and that's what you need to be ready to do at any given stage in your athlete's training and in your athlete's preparations. Because as a coach, it's great to throw out these numbers and, you know, these prescriptions of work volumes and intensity and loads, but if you're not there to put the arm around the kid and say, hey, really proud of you, great job, you know, I know it wasn't what you came here to do, but you're here and you stuck your nose in it, can you live with that? And if the answer is yes, then you can walk away, you know, better for the experience, but not traumatized from the experience. At the end of the day, is what you need.
That's the emotional component. And I think that, I mean, you just, we'll leave it there. You summed it up perfectly.
Boom.
So, you know, that's what it is that picking up the pieces, that emotional control of it and all that stuff. I'll leave with, like, story, Natasha Rogers got 13th here. You know, considering she just missed the team 4 years ago, you might expect, like, a breakdown or something like that. But if you watch her post-race interview, if you, you know, afterwards she comes up, I'm just happy. I'm happy to be here, healthy, competing, and taking my shot. I am enjoying the process of running. I'm excited to compete again.
Awesome.
And I think that, like, more than anything, as a coach, is like, okay, we can build off of this, because, like, you had that perspective of, all right, I threw my cards out there. They weren't good enough. I'm not going to have this meltdown. I want to move forward from here and let's get better. And I think that, like, picking up the pieces in that sense and, like, training athletes, more than anything from this meet is I learned training athletes to have that emotional perspective and control is more important than the physical part of getting them in the best shape of their life.
So true. Like, athletics and life, it's what you make it.
It is. It's easy to get people fit.
Mm-hmm.
It's not that hard.
No.
But that is. So, all right. Thanks for listening to us, guys. I'm sure we'll have more podcasts coming at you from Eugene.
That's true. We're going to try to bring you what you want. I know we've been dormant. We've been getting prepped ourselves for this championship season.
Right. Emotionally.
Now,
emotionally prepped.
And now that we're back, the emotions are a little bit more under our belt, we'll continue to give the people what they want. So thanks for listening.